Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
So today we're finishing the discussion about Lord Rishabhdev. He has, as I mentioned, a string of about 20 verses in this fifth chapter, which are all very powerful and famous shlokas. Prabhupada spoke on them often. So we'll finish those in class, but I just wanted to conclude the pastimes of Rishabhdev. So just briefly reading these summaries. So after instructing his 100 sons, Lord Rishabhdev turns over the kingdom to his eldest son, whose name is Bharat. Right. Then he goes on to renounce his kingdom, which is the quality of one of the qualities of great kings in Srimad Bhagavatam. And as a renunciate, he travels and lives like an avadhut. Avadhut means one who does not care for any worldly conventions. So he went around without clothing, clothed only by the four directions, as they say. And people would treat him, although he was the king of the earth, they would treat him in a very disrespectful way, spitting on him, throwing garbage at him, thinking him just somebody who is mentally retarded and dumb. So he did not care for any of this because he was so detached from all external situations. So in this way, Rishabhdev concluded his pastimes, and he is known as the founder of the Jain religion. You ever heard of Jainism? Jainism is a religion based on renunciation and nonviolence. So the Jains will wear masks, for example, over their mouths and noses so they won't breathe in any microbes. They will not use a mortar and pestle for grinding spices because that will crush, living entities of different kinds, and nobody wants insects in their spices. But, no, actually, it's for nonviolence. What are some of the other Jain practices of non? They'll sweep in front of themselves, yes, while walking to make sure that they don't step on any ants. No potatoes? Why not? Multiple living entities in the potato. Ah. We get multiple living entities in potatoes sometimes, but yes. So he's known. Anyone know the name by which he's known in Jainism? It's not his name, Mahavir. Mahavir. He's the Acharya of Jainism. Ah, so they'll go unclothed and. In some cases.
He didn't found Jainism.
He did not find it, but he's an Acharya, one of the great teachers. It's not his deliberate. Yes, he was just, they imitated. Yes. Yes, he did not deliberately found a new religion, but people imitating him in his name founded this religion, Jainism. That is my understanding, yes. Mahavir. Yeah, the original, also known as Mahavir. So this is the end of the pastimes of Maharaj Rishabhdev and Srimad Bhagavatam. So let's go back and review his teachings, beginning by reading the remaining shlokas from this very famous and prominent part of the Bhagavatam. So let's see. So just pass around the microphone. Let's see everybody read a sloka or two. Okay. Are we charged up? You just have to hold the mic down, hold the button down. Okay. This is chapter 5, verses 10 through 20. Go ahead.
Oh, my sons, you should accept a highly elevated Paramahansa, a spiritually advanced spiritual master. In this way, you should place your faith.
In this way, you should place your faith in love and me. Supreme Personality of Godhead.
And tolerate the duality of pleasure and pain, which are like the season change of summer and winter. Try to realize the miserable condition of living entities. You are miserable even in the higher planetary system. Philosophically, inquire about the true. Then undergo all kinds of austerities and penance for the sake of devotional service. Give up the endeavor for sense enjoyment and engage in the service of the Lord. Listen to discussions about the Supreme Personality of Godhead and always associate with devotees. Chant about and glorify the Supreme Lord and look upon everyone equally on the spiritual platform. Give up enmity and subdue anger and lamentation. Abandon identifying the self with the body and the home and practice reading the revealed scriptures. Live in a secluded place and practice the process by the revealed, by which you can completely control your life, air, mind, and senses. Have full faith in the revealed scriptures, the Vedic literatures, and always observe celibacy. Perform your prescribed duties and avoid unnecessary talks. Always think of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Acquire knowledge from the right source. Thus practicing bhakti yoga, you will patiently and enthusiastically be elevated in knowledge and will be able to give up the false ego.
Whoa. Anything else? Any questions?
As I have advised you, my dear sons, you should act accordingly. Be very careful. By these means, you will be freed from the ignorance of the desire for fruitive activity, and the knot of bondage in the heart will be completely severed. For further advancement, you should also give up the means. That is, you should not become attached to the process of liberation itself.
If one is serious about going back home, back to Godhead, he must consider the mercy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the summum bonum and chief aim of life. If he is a father instructing his sons, a spiritual master instructing his disciples, or a king instructing his citizens, he must instruct them as I have advised. Without being angry, he should continue giving instructions, even if his disciple, son, or citizen is sometimes unable to follow his order. Ignorant people who engage in pious and impious activities should be engaged in devotional service by all means. They should always avoid fruitive activity. If one puts into the bondage of karmic activity his disciple, son, or citizen who is bereft of transcendental vision, how will one profit? It is like leading a blind man to a dark well and causing him to fall in.
Due to ignorance, a materialistic person does not know anything about his real self-interest, the auspicious path in life. He is simply bound to material enjoyment by lusty desires, and all his plans are made for this purpose. For temporary sense gratification, such a person creates a society of envy, and due to this mentality, he plunges into the ocean of suffering. Such a foolish person does not even know about this.
If someone is ignorant and addicted to the path of samsara, how can one who is actually learned, merciful and advanced in the spiritual knowledge engage him in fruitive activity and thus further entangle him in material existence? If a blind man is walking down the wrong path, how can a gentleman allow him to continue on his way to danger? How can he approve this method? No wise or kind man can allow this.
One who cannot deliver his dependents from the path of repeated birth and death should never become a spiritual master, a father, a husband, a mother, or a worshipable demigod.
My transcendental body, Satchitananda Vigraha, it looks exactly like a human form, but it is not a material human body. It is inconceivable. I am not forced by nature to accept a particular type of body. I take on a body by my own sweet will. My heart is also spiritual, and I always think of the welfare of my devotees. Therefore, within my heart can be found the process of devotional service, which is meant for the devotees. Far from my heart, I abandon religion, irreligion, adharma, and non-devotional activities. Where are they? They do not appear to be me.
They do not appeal.
They do not appeal to be me. Due to all these transcendental qualities, people generally pray to me as Rishabhdev, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the best of all living entities.
And then the last one, maybe?
My dear boys, you are all born of my heart, which is the seat of all spiritual qualities. Therefore, you should not be like materialistic and envious men. You should accept your eldest brother, Bharat, who is exalted in devotional service. If you engage yourselves in Bharat's service, your service to him will include my service, and you will rule the citizens automatically.
Very important point here. Please back up then to 18. We'll read that purport. Very important point, how he tells his sons to serve Bharat, and that the service to Bharat will include your service to me. Why would he make such a statement? What would his son be inclined to do? Younger son might say, oh, I'm not listening to you, I'm just doing what my dad said. Right? I'm not going to listen to you, you're just my brother, I'm doing what my father said. So this is the envious mentality. So Rishabhdev is eliminating this. So your service to Bharat will include your service to him. Okay, let's read the Sanskrit for this verse, please. Gurur na sasyat sajano na sasyat. Responsibly, please. Pita na sasyat janani na sasyat. Daivang natat syan napatish chasasyan. Namo chayed yak samupetam rityum. Gurur nasasyat swajano nasasyat. Pita nasasyat janani nasasyat. Daivang natat syang napatish chasasyan. Namo chayad yak samupetam rityum. Please chant. Gurur nasasyat swajano nasasyat. Daivam natasyan napatish chasasyan. Namo chayad yak samupetam rityum. Gurur nasasyat swajano nasasyat. Pita nasasyat janani nasasyat. Daivam tadasyat napatish chasasyat. Namo chayadya samupetam rityum. Gurur nasasyat swajano nasasyat. Pita nasasyat janani nasasyat. Daivam natasyat napatish chasasyan. Namo chayadya samupetam rityum. Anyone else? Gurur nasasyat swajano nasasyat. Pita nasasyat janani nasasyat. Daivam natasyan napatish chasasyan. Namo chayadya samupetam rityum. Guru, a spiritual master. Na, not, saha, he, syat, should become, swajanaha, a relative, na, not, saha, such a person, syat, should become, pita, a father, na, not, saha, he, Shat, should become, Janani, a mother, Na, not, Sa, she, Shat, should become, Daivam, the worshipable deity, Na, not, Tat, that, Shat, should become, Na, pati, not, sorry, Pati, a husband, Cha, also, Saha, he, Shat, should become, Na, not, Mochayet, can deliver, Yaha, who, Samupeta Mrityum, one who is on the path of repeated birth and death. Translation, let's all say together. One who cannot deliver his dependents from the path of repeated birth and death should never become a spiritual master, a father, a husband, a mother, or a worshipable demigod. Sona, would you continue with the purport, please?
There are many spiritual masters, but Rishabhdev advises that one should not become spiritual master if he is unable to save his disciple from the path of birth and death. Unless one is a pure devotee of Krishna, he cannot save himself from the path of repeated birth and death. Tyaktva deham punar janma nati mam iti shujana. One can stop birth and death only by returning home back to Godhead. However, who can go back to Godhead unless he understands the Supreme Lord in truth? Janma karma chami dvevam evam yo veti tatev.
We have many instances in history illustrating Rishabhdeva's instructions. Sukracharya was rejected by Bali Maharaja due to his inability to save Bali Maharaja from the path of repeated birth and death. Shukracharya was not a pure devotee. He was more or less inclined to fruitive activity, and he objected when Bali Maharaja promised to give everything to Lord Vishnu. Actually, one is supposed to give everything to the Lord because everything belongs to the Lord.
Just a brief interruption. This pastime is from the 8th canto in regards to who? Bali Maharaj and Lord Vamandev, right. Lord Vamandev. So Sukracharya was his guru, and Vamandev came. He was going to take away everything from Bali Maharaj. Sukracharya knew this. Bali didn't. But Sukracharya said, "Don't give him anything, even this 3 steps of land. Don't do it." And Bali Maharaj said, "But you have always taught me to give everything to God. Now you're saying not to do it." So he rejected his spiritual master, and therefore he's considered one of the Mahajans, because he rejected him on the basis of Shastra. So this is an example. Sukracharya should not have been a spiritual master if he was not really going to deliver his disciple from birth and death. Okay.
Consequently, the Supreme Lord advises in Bhagavad Gita, Yad karosi yad asnasi, yad juhosi dadasi yat, yad tapasyasi kaunteya, tat kuru sva mad arpanam.
O son of Kunti, all that you do, all that you eat, all that you offer and give away, as well as all austerities that you may perform, you should be done as an offering unto me. This is bhakti. Unless one is devoted, he cannot become everything to the Supreme Lord. Unless one can do so, he cannot become a spiritual master, husband, father or mother. Similarly, the wives of the Brahmanas who were performing sacrifices gave up their relatives just to satisfy Krishna. This is an example of a wife rejecting a husband who cannot deliver her from the impending danger of birth and death.
Okay, remember this story? All the Brahmins were doing their sacrifice. Krishna and Balaram sent the boys to get some food from them. They said, "Go away, go away." They wouldn't even talk to them, actually. They just ignored them. So the boys came back, and then Krishna said, "Go to their wives." And the wives said, "Oh, Krishna's hungry." They brought all the prasadam in the house and went running, brought him everything. And when the husbands saw this, they said, "Oh, we completely lost our opportunity. We blew it. To hell with our sacrifices," they said. But still, they wouldn't follow Krishna because they were afraid Kamsa would catch them and they'd get in trouble. So the wives were much more advanced. And they disregarded the activities and orders of their husbands to please Krishna. So, another example.
Similarly, Prahlad Maharaj rejected his father and Bharat Maharaj rejected his mother.
Does anyone know how Bharat Maharaj rejected his mother? Know this? That Bharata? That is, yes, that's right. Bharat was, she wanted him to be the king, right? And so she conspired and made him the king, and he said, why did you do this? That's very interesting. There's another example of Bharat Maharaj rejecting his mother. Anyone know? When he took, no, not that, not, when he took birth, this Bharat Maharaj, the son of Rishabhdev, he took birth as a deer. And we'll hear tomorrow, because he became attached to a deer. And when he took birth as a deer, he was in full consciousness. So he realized, oh no, I'm a deer. And then he left his mother. He went off to a holy place and ate grass and waited for his next body. Okay, please go ahead.
Jnani Nasa Sayat, the word Devam indicates a demigod or one who accepts worship from a relative, accept worship from the inferior relatives. But here Rishabhdev forbids this.
The word Devam indicates a demigod or one who accepts worship from a dependent.
Okay. Ordinarily, the spiritual master, husband, father, mother, or superior relatives accept the worship from the inferior relatives. But here Rishabhdev forbids this. First, the father, spiritual master or husband must be able to release the dependent from the repeated birth and death. If he cannot do this, he plunges himself into the ocean of reproachment for his unlawful activities. Everyone should be very responsible and take charge of his dependent just as spiritual master takes charge of his disciple or a father takes charge of his son. All these responsibilities cannot be discharged honestly unless one can save the dependent from repeated birth and death.
So obviously this is written from a point of view of Indian culture. Ordinarily, the spiritual master, husband, father, mother, or superior relative accepts worship from an inferior relative. Of course, in America, there's virtually no danger of this happening. But, so the topic of this verse, if you kindly turn back to the translation. Yes, so one should not become any of these things. This is a proscription. One should not become a spiritual master, father, husband, mother, or worshipable demigod unless one can deliver one's dependence. You could also include a teacher in this list. You know? So one aspect of this is all of these things are on an equal level. You should understand that. You know, they are all considered positions of responsibility. So, what is this word, responsibility? The ability to respond, the ability to meet the need of your dependent. And Srila Prabhupada says a great deal about this subject. In the Bhagavad Gita, there's a verse about the Mahatma. Remember? Mahatmanas tu mam partha daivim prakriti mashritam. So, those who are great souls take shelter of the divine nature. And Prabhupada writes there that the Mahatma means one who is broad-minded. So in several places, he uses these two words interchangeably, Mahatma and broad-minded. The opposite of Mahatma, or a great soul, is Duratma, which means cripple-minded. So Mahatma or Duratma. So what is the difference? In terms of spiritual leadership, one thing is that leaders must be able to distinguish principles from details. Okay? If we're going to be leaders, we have to know what is actually important and what is not. So Prabhupada makes a very interesting statement about spiritual life. He says that unless one is happy, one cannot be Krishna conscious. Unless one is happy, one cannot be Krishna conscious. In other words, if there are needs in our lives which are actually not being met, there's no question of advancing spiritually. Bhaktivinoda Thakur in his Jiva Dharma expands on this and enumerates the various needs of a human being. There are physical needs, there are social needs, economic needs, recreational needs, as well as spiritual needs. So if we're neglecting all these things as material, well, that's okay. We may be doing that out of our extreme enthusiasm for spiritual life, but as a result, we won't be happy, and then we won't be able to execute our spiritual life. See, it's artificial renunciation, in other words. If we repress our actual needs in the name of serving Krishna, then we will lose both our material and our spiritual lives. So there is a need, because young people or neophytes will not be able to make this subtle distinction. Therefore, there's need for guidance from elders. And the foundational principle is how to be happy. You could even rephrase this verse that's so important. If the spiritual master, husband, father, mother, or God cannot make their dependents happy, then they have no business being in that position. So spiritual life does not mean making everyone miserable. You know? It's like the medieval flagellants. You know, they beat themselves on the back with whips in order to atone for their sins. And this was considered a high expression of spirituality. So Mahatma means, therefore, broad-minded. To be leaders, we have to recognize people's needs and be able to meet their needs. You know, not their whims or their wants necessarily, but what they need in order to be happy. So sometimes when we're young or immature or inexperienced, we don't know what we need. Like even Arjuna expressed this. He said to Krishna, Shishyastaham sadimam tvam prapanna. Karpanya dosho pahata svabhava. This word karpanya also means, miserly. Same word, right? Kripa. So he's expressing that due to this miserly, my weak intelligence, I become unempowered. I don't know what to do. So it's good if we have the intelligence to recognize when our needs are not being met. Then we have to go to somebody who can help us meet them, who can help us understand. If we're not happy in Krishna consciousness, something is wrong. See? We're doing something wrong, or we're missing something that we need. And it may be out of an artificial renunciation. We're thinking, I can't do this because it's not Krishna conscious. And then we're not happy. And therefore not advancing. So it's important, if we're going to be leaders, to be able to be broad-minded and see the greater scope of a person's life and needs, okay? Not just a set of beliefs that we want to impose on somebody, but rather what do they actually need to be balanced? This is the whole meaning of the Varnashram system, you know, that people's needs can be met, they can have balanced lives, they can be happy, and then they can progress in Krishna consciousness. The Prabhupada makes a specific statement. No one can be Krishna conscious unless they are happy. That's why he gave what appears to be a blessing, but what's actually an order. Chant Hare Krishna and be happy. Okay, so this is an important principle to begin with in this discussion. So beyond that, what are the qualities of the leader? First of all, it starts with one's self. There's a famous story, I believe it's about Mahatma Gandhi. A mother came to Mahatma Gandhi with her child and said, my child is addicted to sweets, but the doctor says because of his diabetes or something, the sweets will kill him. So please tell him to stop eating sweets. And Mahatma Gandhi said, come see me tomorrow. So the mother came back the next day, and Mahatma Gandhi says to the child, stop eating sweets! And the mother thanked him, but she said, why didn't you just tell him that yesterday? He said, because yesterday I had not stopped eating sweets myself. So first one must be an acharya, an example. Okay? Like the famous mantra of all parents, do what I do, what I say, not what I do. So, in the great scholar Rupa Goswami wrote over 10,000 verses in his many books. And he was asked to give the essence of all his advice. So he wrote one book called the Upadeshamrita, the nectar of all advice, the essence of all instructions. And the excuse me, first several verses in this, of the 11 verses in this book, first three or four deal with subjects related to leadership. And the first one is Vacho Vegam, Manasa Krodha Vegam, Jiva Vegam, Udara Upasta Vegam. The word Vegam means urges or pushings. So he says that one who can control the six urges can make disciples anywhere in the world. What are these six urges? Vacha, first is speech. So the austerity of speech, controlling the speech, very important point. In the Gita, Krishna describes this as speaking truthfully, beneficially, and avoiding speech that offends. Okay? So three things must be there. Truthful, beneficial, and avoiding speech that offends. So we could go out and speak truthfully and beneficially for the general public, right? Chant Hare Krishna, or you're going to hell. That's true, right? In fact, you're already in hell. That's also true. We could say that truthfully and beneficially, but would it offend them? Probably. How are they going to react? I mean, how do you react when you go through Turlington Plaza and somebody's out there? You're going to hell! You're going to hell! I remember years ago, this devotee, very enthusiastic young devotee, he was doing a college preaching tour, and he had a write-up in the college newspaper. And the editor said, reporting on the free speech area, he said, so such and such Das, speaking on behalf of the Hare Krishnas, called the large audience fools. So how did, yes, was it truthful? Yes. Was it beneficial? Probably not. But this is not a way to endear yourself to somebody. So we'll see very advanced devotees like Radhanath Maharaj, for example. His speech is always very sweet, very appealing, very kind, and always looking for the good qualities in others. So you know, avoiding speech that offends is actually an austerity of the tongue. This is the austerity of speech. Okay. Then manasa, the austerity of the mind, or the control of the urges of the mind. The urges of the mind are so subtle and so strong. Okay? They urge us to do really, the mind urges us to do really self-defeating things. Okay? It just goes on and on. Like the mind will say, oh, you're feeling pretty, you're really humble now. You become really humble. You're offering your obeisances, you've got your palms folded. How humble you become. And then immediately you feel like you just passed bad air or something. No, that isn't it. That isn't right. My mind is not supposed to think like that. You know, but then how do I be humble? Because as soon as I feel humble, then I feel proud. You know, or the mind will start saying, oh, you can't do it. Oh, you've made so many mistakes. You know, you should just give up. You know, this is just another way of the mind trying to get back into its position of calling the shots. Years ago in Mayapur, this devotee did a wonderful play. He was Russian, actually. His former job was being doing plays for the Russian army. So he did this wonderful play. Just two men. It was also a silent play. They didn't speak English. It was just pantomime, the whole thing. And one of them played the soul, and one of them played the mind. And in the initial scenes, the mind's calling all the shots, and it's very funny. And then the last scene, the person comes walking out, and he's got this mind on a chain around his neck. And the mind is wearing a dhoti. He's wearing a dhoti, and he comes trudging out. So finally, he's controlled his mind and convinced him to be a devotee. So I always remember that sight. Yes, this is the fight that we have to fight with the mind. When it's telling us that we're no good, or that we're too good, or the future's not going to be any good, or the future's going to be so great, you know, or the past was so bad, or the past was so good. All this hazarai is just the products of the mind. Prabhupada writes in his prayer of Vrindavan Bhajan that one should not eat the bananas of the mind. The bananas are this really prolific fruit, and they just grow and grow and grow. You know, so one should not eat them, you know, because there's always going to be a new crop coming in. So how do we avoid eating the bananas of the mind? We have to have the order of the higher authorities and just follow them. Okay, we don't have to be great. We don't have to be perfect. It doesn't really matter where we are. You know, if we're following the instruction, then we're all right. See? This is just the influence of the modes of nature. Manasa vega, pushings of the mind. Anger, anger comes from what, according to Bhagavad Gita? Lust, unsatisfied lust, which comes from attachment, which comes from contemplating the object of the senses, right? So this is why Krodha comes after Manasa. If we let our mind just dwell on sense gratification, well, it's true, in Kali Yuga, you don't get karma for just thinking about sense gratification. But if we let the mind think about sense gratification, then the result is we become angry. Because it just says, yeah, that sounds good. Oh, but I can't get it. Oh, that stinks. So this Krodha Vegam is associated with Manasa Vegam, with the uncontrolled mind. That's why, you know, chanting is so beneficial. Just chanting is a wrestling match with the mind. And if we have that wrestling match every day, we may not win a knockdown, you know, unanimous decision every day with our mind, but we will be pushing it back and learning to control it by a concentrated, focused japa. This is why it's really good to sit in one place in the association of devotees and just chant. At least a few rounds every day, because that is, for most people, the best way to make sure we are battling the mind and not just chanting like externally or superficially, but not really hearing. You know, there's power in the association of devotees. Like in the Chopati temple, which is a very exemplary temple, it's very rigid. You know, everyone sits down and chants, and they sit in groups and look at each other. Same groups every day, right? So you have your japa squad, and they sit there for about at least an hour or an hour and a half, just chanting. And again, Radhanath Maharaj, very exemplary. He sits there with his japa squad every day and does not get in conversations and does not do anything else but sit and chant, Hare Krishna, 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 for an hour and a half. You know, it's very powerful. So we can help each other like that. You know, the tendency of the mind is, well, let me go over here and there, let's get some new scenery or something. But at least some period of time is very good to sit and chant with the devotees. This will help control the mind and control anger. Then jiva udara upasta. Jiva is the tongue. Tarma jaya jivai hati. Krishna gives us prasad to control the tongue. That's very good. And, of course, also speaking, chanting. Then udara, like damodara. Damodara means the Lord who is bound by the belly. Udara means the belly. If the tongue is controlled, then the belly will be filled, but only modestly, or only what is needed. Some people say take a little belch as a sign that the stomach is telling you, okay, that's enough. The yogi, Prabhupada writes, says his belly one half full of food, one quarter full of water, and one quarter full of air. So These are some things. But overeating is a good mistake for a young man, and undereating is a good mistake for an old man. Prabhupada said that. So it's all right if you eat a little bit too much. But if you eat so much that the genitals become agitated, then you know. Then this is a mistake. So the upasta vegam in Krishna consciousness simply means no illicit sex life. This means that that one should control sex life either through not having any sex life or being properly married. Being sexually agitated is not a qualification for being married, but being married is the natural position for almost everybody. Okay, so it is important to understand that a successful marriage is one in which both partners help each other in their spiritual advancement. This Krishna even says in the Gita, "Kamosmi Bharatarshabha." I am sex life, which is not contrary to religious principles. My good friend Brajabihari once said, look, he says in Bhagavad Gita that Krishna says, I am sex life, which is not contrary to religious principles. And so my other friend Akendra Prabhu points out, as he pointed out, he says, it all depends on where you put the comma. You get it? Anyway, this is upastavegam. Being either celibate or properly married, and within marriage, regulated. That's it. Yuktahara viharasya yuktachetasya karmashi. So, these are the preliminary requirements for leadership. If we have difficulty controlling our anger, we can't be a good parent, you know? If we have difficulty controlling our mind, we can't be a good spouse. If we can't control the physical urges of our body, we really can't help anybody very much. Okay? So this is the preliminary. Then Rupa Goswami goes into some very interesting paradoxes in describing the subsequent qualities of leadership. Utsahan and Dhairyat. So what is a paradox? Apparently contradictory things, right? Oxymorons, like military intelligence or legal ethics, you know, self-contradictory statements. So, utsahan and dhairyat, enthusiasm and patience. Now, these are apparently contradictory things, isn't it? To get something done, you really have to be in the mode of passion. It's just a fact. To get it done, you've got to get in there and do it. Right? Okay, let's just get the lunch out, or let's just get the offering done, or let's just get the room clean. It takes a little bit of passion. It takes enthusiasm. Enthusiasm is always a prerequisite for greatness, for accomplishment. Nobody can accomplish anything great without enthusiasm. But if the enthusiasm is entirely in the mode of passion, we will not be able to sustain it. See, that's the thing. Unless we have patience, then the enthusiasm comes and goes. It starts and then, I've lost my enthusiasm. So patience means the mode of goodness. So to be able to find sustained enthusiasm in spiritual life is the hallmark of success as a devotee. Sustained enthusiasm. We can find a burst of enthusiasm initially because pure devotional service, just by following Prabhupada's order, relieves all material distress immediately. And it places one in the highest transcendental bliss. This happens just by following the order of the pure devotee. And when somebody gets it, when somebody experiences that, they think, all right, that's easy, man. That's it. I'm just going to follow the order and I'll always be in transcendental bliss. Yeah. But then, something goes wrong, something comes along, and all of a sudden we're in the dumps. We're depressed. And then we start questioning the process. What's wrong? Maybe it doesn't work after all. And this is the mode of ignorance, okay? So, because we're still affected by these pushings of the modes of nature, remember we talked a little about in the third canto, the teachings of Lord Kapiladeva to his mother, he explains devotional service in the mode of passion, ignorance, and goodness. Quality of passion and ignorance is that one always wants to be separate from the devotees. One wants to do one's own thing. Okay? There's great power. Okay, nobody wants to be a cult member. Nobody wants to look like everybody else or appear to be a loser who can't think for themselves. But there's power in association of devotees. Lokanath Maharaj gives this wonderful example. At Kumbh Mela, this is the largest gathering of human beings on earth. It's the only assembly of human beings that can be seen from outer space. There are millions of people there at the confluence of the Ganges and Jamuna to bathe in the river at this auspicious moment, okay? So it's very cold. It happens in January or February. And if you're determined to bathe in the cold river at that moment, then you'll be going to be in a mass of humanity, crush of humanity with thousands of other people. So suppose you make up your mind, I'm going to do it. With all the cold, all the crowds, I'm going to do it. So you get in the crowd and you're pushing and pushing and you're getting closer and closer and then you change your mind. Maybe this isn't such a good idea. Okay? I think I'll go back. What's going to happen to you? There's no way. You are going in that river and you're going to be... So this is the advantage of the Association of Devotees, that even if we change our mind, if we're packed up in the Association of Devotees, we won't be able to escape. See, I can't leave because what are they going to say? Oh, I'd better be at Mangalartik or else Naveen's going to be on my case. I'm just using Naveen as a theoretical example. This helps us. See, and like being here at Krishna House, there's this great advantage of a little psychological peer pressure in that regard. When you move out, and when you're working in Paducah, Kentucky, where there is no temple, you know, and you think, okay, I'm just going to get up at 5 o'clock and do my puja, then you'll find out, boy, it's really a lot easier at Krishna House, you know. So take advantage while you can and get a taste. This is the advantage of being in the Association of Devotees. We gain the strength to be enthusiastic and sustain it with patience. Now, in this regard, there's another paradox, which is niyamagraha or niyamagraha. Niyamagraha means to follow the rules and regulations blindly, you know, without thinking about how this will help me advance spiritually. And the niyamagraha is to not follow them at all. So this is another paradox for the neophyte devotees. Okay, I'm just going to follow the rules and regulations, and that's taking me back to Godhead. Okay, this is connected with our earlier discussion about avoiding speech that offends. You know, if we're going to be leaders, we have to help people be happy. If we reprimand people, if we criticize them in a way that makes them unhappy, have we succeeded as leaders? No. We have failed. First thing, you know. So leaders know how to catch people doing things right, not just wrong. See? Being able to recognize, oh, you've done very well. Good. Congratulations. Good job. Good job. Recognizing people doing things right is the quality of leadership for a parent, for a guru, for anyone in a leadership position, even in a marriage. In a marriage, please take note of this, Jita. I'm sorry. Yes, catch your dependent doing something right. The problem with this niyamagraha is that one may be following very strictly oneself, and then find fault with people who are less strict. And this is a terrible mistake. It's a big fall down in Krishna consciousness. Nobody appointed us to be the fault finder with everybody else. You know, if we think that that's advancement, we're sadly mistaken. It's just imitation. See, it's just imitating. So this is another paradox. We have to follow the rules and regulations strictly, and yet at the same time, not blindly. And we have to be broad-minded. That means, what this means is, we can be as strict as we want with who? With ourselves. We can be absolutely strict and pukka and not miss a regulation, you know, and do everything just right. But how about others? Very liberal. Very lenient. This is the meaning of mahatma, of broad-minded. We're very liberal with others. Very liberal, very tolerant, very encouraging, always looking for the good in them. This is Niyamagraha, this paradox. This is how it's reconciled. And finally, there's another strange contradiction. Nischayat, and then tat tat karma pravartana. Nischayat means what? Yes, or Prabhupada uses the word confidence. Confidence. Nobody can be a leader unless they have some self-confidence. Right? You have to, who's going to follow you if you don't believe in yourself? Right? Sometimes people have a low self-esteem, but they want to be leaders so that others will boost them up. Gee, am I really that good? Thank you. Yes. Maybe I am that good. See? That confidence has to come from strictly following the orders of the spiritual master and then getting realization and experience from doing so. It's confidence not in ourselves as these great people, but in our ability to be honest and take the instructions of our spiritual master and follow them, and then confident in the process that when we do that, we advance. Okay? That confidence we are entitled to have. We can be confident in Krishna. We can be proud of Krishna. We can be proud of our spiritual master. And this way, there's confidence in our endeavor. But then, behaving properly, if we are arrogant and we are telling people how much better we are than they are, who's going to follow? This is again, always inappropriate behavior. So, to be a leader, a husband, a father, mother, we have to be very exemplary in our behavior. Always trying to understand the other person. This is tat tat karma pravartana. Being able to listen. Being able to understand the other person. This also gives you confidence. In my experience, there are two kinds of people in this world. There are people who like to talk about themselves and are looking for someone to listen, and there are people who listen to them. Okay? And the latter is about 99.9% of humanity. Or the former, rather. And the latter is just 0.1%. There's a small number of people in this world who are more interested in other people than themselves. Or at least, they're willing to listen. They want to find out sincerely about the other person. And it's very interesting because people are interesting. You know? If you're interested in other people, your own problems just evaporate. They just become insignificant. But most of us are just wandering around all the time thinking about ourselves and our problems. And this is the problem. So if we just ask people about their lives and try to learn about them and talk about them, get them to talk about themselves. It's very interesting. One gentleman I met once was saying, yeah, I just like to pump people for information. So this is a little self-serving, but I appreciated his sentiment. And when he would meet somebody, he'd start asking them the questions. Well, where are you from? Oh, how is it over there? And what did you do there? Oh, how did you like that occupation? And people would talk about themselves. If you do this, you'll find it's the most interesting thing. Like if you're on an airplane, you know, and you're stuck with somebody and sitting next to somebody for an hour or two. So you ask them some question. And sometimes people will tell you things that they probably have never told anyone else in their lives. Knowing that they're never going to see you again, they'll unburden their heart. They'll tell you about their kids. They'll tell you about their cheating husband. They'll tell you about their, you know, they'll tell you all kinds of things because they needed somebody to talk to. And they'll never ask you a thing about yourself. You ever experienced that? Now, after that experience, so you've sat with somebody for an hour, they've done all the talking, you've just done nothing but ask them questions. So do you feel like a loser after that? How do you feel? Yeah, you feel enriched. It could be a little burdensome, yes. But generally speaking, if you have listened to the other person, you will feel about yourself, you'll feel enriched. I've really learned something here. This was interesting. Okay, yes, there are boorish people who just will go blah, 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 blah about themselves. I'm just talking about somebody who's ordinary person who's kind of opened up to you. Yeah. Then you'll feel enriched and you don't feel like a loser. If you do this in the association of devotees, you get to know so much about the other devotees. And I don't know, to me it's an extremely empowering thing to know more about other people than they know about you. It's empowering. It's like, you'll tell them if they ask, but generally people don't ask. Why? Because they're more interested in talking about themselves. So learn about other people, and they will appreciate it. You know, they will, and then they'll be inclined to follow. So in this way, these are paradoxes that find their reconciliation in Krishna consciousness. There's a beautiful verse in the sixth canto. I'll conclude with this point. The demigods, in praising Lord Vishnu, say that all contradictions are resolved in the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So in the purport, Prabhupada explains this is because everything comes from Krishna. Arjuna, Yudhisthira comes from Krishna, and Duryodhana comes from Krishna. You know? It's not that Duryodhana came from somewhere else, and he's a big pain in the neck for Krishna. No, he also comes from Krishna. It's just that Krishna assigns Balaram, you deal with Duryodhana. I want to deal with Yudhisthira. So, we can understand that these contradictory points of view come from God. He's the origin of everything. You know, he's not suffering. There was a case when one of the artists, I think it was Jadarani, painted a picture of Krishna and he was crying. Krishna's crying. So Prabhupada said, "What is this?" And she said, "Oh, Prabhupada, Krishna is feeling separation from the gopis." And Prabhupada scoffed. He said, "He is not crying." So, yes, Krishna feels separation, but it does not make him cry. Krishna is always enjoying, even though he's feeling separation. He's crying out of fear, that's another thing. Maybe, no, but separation is the highest ecstasy. So, this is some points about leadership. Recognize the paradoxes. Confident but humble. Enthusiastic but patient. Following strictly but not blindly. Okay. Any questions or comments? Garrison, and then, don't become a worshipable demigod.
You can't become a demigod unless you earn it.
Well, what happens is that devotees who become a little infatuated by material opulence can wind up as demigods. See, even yogis. It's called the last snare of Maya. That this is the yogi or the devotee is leaving the material world. They ascend to the higher and higher planets, and they look out the window and say, "Oh, that looks interesting." You know, so in this way, actually, one can become a demigod. But you could take the word demigod to mean like even an employer, you know, one who gives benedictions to others, an employer or a teacher or any position of superiority. You know, there's management and leadership. The demigods are in charge of managing, right? But leadership is different than management. Like, who here has had experience of a manager who can't lead very well? Yeah, okay. Like, they're nasty, they're unpleasant. How about a leader, someone inspirational, who could not manage their way out of a paper bag? Anyone experienced such people? Yeah. Okay, so the idea is, we need to understand both things. Not only be able to exercise power, have an exercise power, but to deliver our dependents, to actually benefit them. Like there was one story, there was one factory owner in America who retired. He was a very, very good boss. Everyone loved him. He was the owner and operator of this mid-sized factory. When he retired, he sold the business. And then he divided the proceeds of the sale. He sold it for like $60 million, a true story. He took $2 million to set himself up for life. and he gave the other $58 million to his employees who had made the company successful based on their seniority, based on their years of loyal service. So everyone appreciated what a great leader this man was, how he really cared for his dependents. So this is the meaning. You can look at it that way.
And another thing is, you say no one should become like these different